President Obama signed the military authorization bill earlier this week, setting aside $680 billion of federal funding for the Pentagon. For months, the president had been railing against waste in the defense budget and warned that he would veto any bill that included certain expensive projects, such as F-22 fighter jets and airborne lasers. Congress obliged for the most part, and the bills signed on Wednesday did not include several billion dollars worth of military equipment and projects. Also excluded from the budget was $11.2 billion for a fleet of presidential helicopters and $7.5 billion for training and equipping the Afghan National Army. Not all the president's requests were honored by Congress, and he responded by saying that, quote, changing the culture in Washington will take time and sustained effort. But the New York Times reported that the move is part of a political strategy for the president to appear to be taking a strong stand on at least this issue. The Pentagon budget now includes $550 billion for the fiscal year 2010, with an additional $130 billion more for the Iraq and Afghanistan wars. My guest is Frida Berrigan. She is the senior research associate at the Arms Trade Resource Center. Welcome to Uprising, Frida.
Good to be with you.
So first, what is your response to the things that were actually cut from the Pentagon, from the military budget? Were these things worth cutting, and has enough been cut?
Sure. No, enough has not been cut from the military budget. I mean, when Defense Secretary Robert Gates unveiled the administration's military budget in April of 2009, he did so with a lot of fanfare and a lot of rhetoric about this being a new era and a time for hard decisions around the military budget, and listed probably a dozen weapon systems that were on the chopping block. And even then, these were relatively modest cuts, and cuts around the edges of the military budget. I mean, $680 billion is a lot of money to be giving to the Pentagon. And it's been characterized in mainstream media as a cut to the military budget, our 2010 budget.
Let's compare it to last year's budget, though. Is it that it is less than last year's budget, or just that the expected increase is not as much?
It is about $27 billion more than last year's budget. It's a 3.9% increase over last year's budget. And so it's certainly not a decrease. Money has been moved around, but it hasn't decreased. And it's in line with what the Pentagon expects in terms of increases for the next 10 years. They're hoping for 2.5% increases over the next 10 years. And so this is even more than what the Pentagon has been expecting.
And is that because which part of it is bloated then? Or is it because of the reauthorization for both the Iraq and Afghanistan wars?
That is part of it. $130 billion for Iraq and Afghanistan is a lot of money, but it's about what the United States has been spending on an annual basis on military operations in these two countries. Part of the increase, of course, is the pay increase for military personnel. There's a 3.4 pay increase for them. And then there's more money for reconnaissance planes, money that was cut from the F-22, you know, it's not like that went to education or something. That went to the Joint Strike Fighter, the F-35. And so there's a reprioritization in terms of big procurement programs, but it's not a cut by any stretch of the imagination.
It's interesting when you look at the New York Times article that came out yesterday. The headline is simply "Victory for Obama over Military Lobby." Are you saying that this is essentially a false statement, or that his actions had some sort of symbolic value at least?
Well, I think they did have symbolic value, and in some sense, it is a victory over the military lobby, and one that the administration fought really hard for, which I think is an indication of what a difficult nut the military budget is to crack. Military lobby fought very, very hard, tooth and nail, actually, since April, against, particularly against cuts to the F-22.
But if it was just a matter of moving money around, why did they fight it?
Because they're not accustomed to having to make any choices. The last 8 years, the last 9 years, has really been boom times for the military industry. And they've known that it couldn't last forever, but they weren't going down without a fight. And they won in some significant ways. The F-22s that were cut from the military budget, four of those ended up in the emergency supplemental for 2009 for the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan. So that's billions of dollars that went to Lockheed Martin for planes that have no relevance, fighter planes that have no relevance in today's security environment, no purpose other than to continue to give contracts to Lockheed Martin. So they lobbied very hard. They, you know, mobilized their base. They made the jobs argument. They gave a lot of money to key members of Congress, and they won on some level, right? Because they got these planes in the supplemental. And then they really do win anyway. Lockheed Martin, who manufactures the F-22, also manufactures the Joint Strike Fighter. So their stock price is fine after all of this announcement. They're doing, you know, more than fine. They're doing well. But they did have to fight pretty hard. And on some level, they did lose. But the real question is, what is the 2011 budget going to look like?
Well, let's talk about that a little bit later. But in this budget itself, were there any cuts to the military, rather to the missile defense systems?
Sure. There were a couple programs within missile defense that were cut. The airborne laser was cut. One of the kinetic kill vehicles was cut. And these are research and development programs. These aren't, you know, we're not manufacturing missile defense on a large scale yet. We're still testing the technology.
And many say that this technology may never work.
That's right. And I am certainly in that camp where, you know, the United States has spent more than $100 billion pursuing missile defense technology since 1983. And that funding went way up under the Bush administration. He basically saw missile defense as a substitute, as a stand-in for international treaties and agreements with other nations around cutting nuclear weapons. He said, I don't want all these treaties. I want a system that can protect the United States. So he poured a lot of resources into missile defense to the point where, you know, we're spending about $9 billion a year right now on this technology. And so that was a success, right, that the Obama administration was able to kind of push back on that a little bit and kill some of these programs. He still is putting a lot of money into missile defense and wants to erect some systems in Eastern Europe still and perhaps in Turkey. So it's not like it's cut out completely, but he did take some nibbles out of it.
I'm speaking with Frida Berrigan. She is an expert in weapons budgets and also senior research associate at the Arms Trade Resource Center. She's written a lot about tax monies being spent on the military. So I want to ask you about Robert Gates, the defense secretary, who is a holdover from the Bush administration, very much embraced by the Obama administration. He played a role, pretty strong a role, early on in this this fight to trim, you know, bits and pieces of the margins of the military budget. And in the New York Times article I mentioned earlier, he was quoted by Rahm Emanuel telling, as if, you know, in his conversation with the president, saying that this issue could help the president, that the administration needed to, quote, shake up sacred cows and be seen as taking on fights. Frida Bergen, how much of this is symbolic, you know, with the president under fire on from progressives on health care reform, as seen particularly by conservatives as not taking a firm enough stand on the Afghanistan war? How much of this you think is a sort of symbolic effort by the president to appear to be having a spine on at least one or two issues?
I think that's accurate. I think you can certainly read it that way. And I think he does look strong on all of this, and is able to say, I'm strong on defense. I'm strong for the military. I'm giving the military a big pay raise here. We're gonna honor our troops. He's been making that speech a number of times in the last couple of weeks, appearing before military audiences as he deliberates the strategy in Afghanistan. And so I think there is some symbolic value there. I don't think many progressives are going to look at this and see this as anything more than really marginal cuts. I don't think most progressives are going to buy the, this is a new day in terms of defense spending. But I think it's a start, but a very, very small start.
Now, let's talk about the 2011 budget. If this is a start, if this is some sort of indicator from this White House that they may try to trim wasteful spending in the military, well, some would argue that most of the military spending is wasteful, but at least from the centrist point of view, trim military waste, what could the 2011 budget potentially look like, and what are some things that progressives could ask for?
Sure. I think that's going to be the real, proof of the pudding is what does the 2011 budget look like? Does it sustain and move forward on the cuts that Rubber Gates announced in April of this year, or does it kind of go back to business as usual? One place to look at is the Future Combat System, which is an Army program. A very, very expensive program, tens of billions of dollars already spent on basically eight different components that will all be connected and wired together, basically making it so a soldier in the field has access to satellite imaging, and he can hear his commander who's back at base camp, and has weapons that can peer around corners, and very sophisticated vehicles. The military budget for 2010 cuts out the vehicle, the tank, that's part of the Future Combat System. Many people say that this whole project is a big boondoggle. Boeing, which is based in Washington and has headquarters also in Chicago, is the lead system integrator of this system, and it's just very, very expensive, and really, most people in the Army would even say, this is not what we need. So the vehicle has been cut from that. And in his speech announcing the budget, Obama talked as though the whole program was terminated. We've gotten rid of the Future Combat System, is what he said, but only one component of it has actually been cut. And a new vehicle program is already underway, the ground combat vehicle. So that's one place, when we look at the 2011 budget, I'm certainly going to be looking at, is there a ground combat vehicle in there? Are there other components of the Future Combat System that are going to be cut? Also, missile defense will be another good litmus test of how serious this administration is about cutting waste.
And Frida, actually, yesterday we talked on our program about Pakistan and, of course, brought up the unmanned drone attacks in Pakistan. What about that and funding for these unmanned drones and that particular program, as well as something that progressives ought to be looking at very seriously for the 2011 budget?
Oh, definitely. I mean, the reconnaissance planes, which drones fit under, funding for that increased in the 2010 budget, and I would expect it to increase again in the 2011 budget. You know, this is still relatively new technology, and so I would expect us to be spending even more money on it because it is, I mean, as terrible as it is and how as destabilizing as it is and as lethal it is, this is technology that is very successful as far as the administration and the Pentagon are concerned.
Finally, Frieda Berrigan, draw the line between military spending, the Defense Department spending, and the economic recession, particularly as people are struggling to convince Congress for the need for a public option at the very least, or a single-payer health care system, as you know, people are losing jobs. It's incredible. We had talked to you, I remember, some months ago on this program about this false assumption that military spending boosts the economy, and I'm not sure if that thinking is still prevalent in government, even as many are claiming the recession is over. But the more money that goes into the budget, the less there is left over for important needs, for infrastructure needs, for unemployment benefits and all sorts of other benefits from our tax dollars.
That's right. I mean, you hit the nail on the head there. I mean, $680 billion going to the Pentagon between what we're spending in Iraq and Afghanistan and the base budget is an enormous amount of money. It's more than half of discretionary spending, what Congress makes decisions on an annual basis. And at a time when everything else is getting cut, you know, when whole states are, you know, laying people off and unable to pay for unemployment, you know, basically kind of hamstrung completely because there's just no money. The fact that we're spending $680 billion on the military is pretty indefensible. And so, you know, where is the money for all of the other needs going to come from? It really has to come from the military budget. And the kind of rearranging or reallocating that happens in this budget is not adequate for beginning to meet those needs.
Frieda Berrigan, I want to thank you very much for joining us. And I do want to make a correction. You're no longer with the Arms Trade Resource Center. I apologize for that. You're now the Senior Program Associate of the Arms and Security Initiative at the New America Foundation. Thanks so much, Frieda Berrigan.
Really good to speak with you.
Frieda Berrigan, again, our guest, talking about the recent news that the president has won a victory over the military lobby. Well, in fact, was it really a victory? Only very small portions of the margins of the military budget have been trimmed.